woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Well, welcome to Section Jacks. I'm Tom Howie. Jack Silverman on the board by himself today. No Matt Weber backup. I think he's absolutely ready. He's a good man, Jack. Welcome. You're being charged, so feel free to pipe in. Feel free to tell me where I'm nuts, which is, you know, every couple of minutes or so. If Lou doesn't. If Lou's too nuts to tell me I'm nuts, it's your job. How's that?
Sounds good.
Lou, how are you, buddy?
It's still early here, and by the way, you're nuts.
I know. I know. Why would I bring guys like you on to joust with in front of other people if I wasn't nuts?
I was going to say, do you need additional backup on arguing? But anyway, welcome, Jack.
What do you make of what's going on? We had the Fed chair in front of the House yesterday and pretty much told everybody he's going to lower rates by 0.25%, which will probably piss people off. But I don't know what I'm hoping for. Lou, I like the fact that it's driving my gold up, and my gold people are happy as a clam for the first time in a while. And my oil people are happy too. So I got people that are happy. So I guess I should be happy. But it's
your oil people are happy in large part because there's a good sized tropical storm or depression, I guess it is now, brewing in the Gulf. It's going to shut production down for a while.
Well, whenever the water gets hotter than normal, which I believe it is, Lou, it's a dangerous situation.
So let me just talk briefly about the hurricane that came ashore there last year on the Florida Panhandle. I have good friends.
What was the name of that thing?
Who are now ripping the drywall in May. Remember, the storm came ashore in the fall.
Yep.
They are now ripping the drywall out of their houses for mold remediation.
Oh, God, yeah.
And their floors are being torn up. They still have not recovered. It was a small hurricane. I can't remember the name of it, but it was a Michael or something. It was a small hurricane in terms of overall width, but a devastating storm in terms of intensity, where it came ashore. It totally shut down Tyndall Air Force Base, destroyed a bunch of very valuable aircraft that they couldn't evacuate in time, ripped up hangars, blasted, you know, I mean, it's a tent city there right now. And so a huge impact that I don't know what you hear about in Chicago. We don't hear much about it in Denver, but a huge impact on the local economy, on roads, and you know, everything else down there. And they are still, you know, remediating the damage. I mean, the idea that you can, one of these things can waltz in and we can step away from it, throw some resources at it, and things get back to normal within a few months is not true. Look at what's going on in Puerto Rico.
Lou, let me stop you for a second. Are you accusing today's world, where everything is a tweet, and if something happens and there's 50 arms and legs of young boys and girls laying out in the cornfield, are you saying that 3 days later people haven't totally forgotten it on to the next tweet?
I'm saying that people may have forgotten it, but the impact, the ability even of a modern society like ours with plenty of resources the ability of this society to recover from not even a significant, you know, a huge act of nature, just a, you know, a moderate act of nature, is still, you know, is still slow. And we lose track of that. You know, we lose track of that in the, you know, just how long it takes to physically do stuff. You know, tear down walls, rebuild, reconstruct. It takes a while. And I don't know what the point is or the answer is on this, and I don't know why it does. Is it because we don't have the labor base anymore to throw, you know, the kind of manual, you know, manually intensive labor that we used to? Because that's what's involved down here. These are not automated jobs. These are jobs where you've got to have bodies on the ground, picking up trash, moving stuff, clearing trees, clearing debris, tearing out walls. All that stuff's got to get done. And I, you know, do we not have the manpower for that?
Lou, if you put up, this is not a shot at our buddy Jack. If you put up a sign in every college, especially in the north here, and said, "We'll pay, we'll train." I mean, because we're talking about some skilled labor. We'll train, but I'm going to say the average, well, I shouldn't. The average college male, within a week, would know how to hang plasterboard. He wouldn't be the best at it. Would know how to pull down walls, get rid of mold, recognize it, wear the mask. If you were to say, "We'll pay $25 an hour, guarantee you 60 hours a week," you don't get a soul on that bus, Lou.
I mean, I think there's something to that, and this goes this goes back to something that I throw up on Facebook every now and then when I read some horrible story like the one I read the other day about some horrible, awful, upset at this preschool in Brooklyn. And if Jack can find it, Brooklyn preschool, 1%, you know, bar fight kind of thing. You can pull it down because it's worth a read. But every now and then I still think like this happens, and I yearn for the draft. You know, Tom, yep. I yearn for the days where we were involuntarily taking, you know, a sizable cohort out of the 18 to 22 year old population and saying, "We are going to subject you to rigorous physical activity, discipline, and teamwork, and you're gonna have to do it."
I actually believe, Lou, that we would.
But I think you're right. For whatever reason, we've lost the, we've lost the respect for that kind of labor, and it, you know, I think a lot, and we've provided a safety net that basically disincentivizes people from that kind of hard work.
Well, we're beating up on him because the poor guy's not here. When back in the 2008 fiasco or 9, when nobody had a lot of young people didn't have a job, so Matt Weber's got, you know, I'm going to say 5 of his buddies are out of work, and they're all on the basketball team. It's not like they're a bunch of weenies. I mean, guys that are pretty strong and in pretty good shape. I said, "Matty, if everybody's really hurting," I said, "you know what? You're not going to get me on a ladder all weekend, but I can get us a few painting jobs." I mean, I did all this stuff when I was a kid. I said, "I get us a few painting jobs, and I'll teach your guys how to do it. Maybe we'll get one other guy with us that knows how he's doing. And by the way, I bet we can make some money. You know, there's 5 people I know in the neighborhood want their house painted." "Oh God, we don't want to do anything like that." Okay, that was it.
Yeah, I think that's right. The guy who does dirty jobs on the Discovery Channel, or who used to, Mike.
Since when is painting a house a dirty job?
But his comment, that was his show. But his comment was that we have really kind of denigrated physical labor and the people who do physical labor. I mean the political culture of at least one of our political parties, and maybe both, is that these people are part of the deplorables.
Yep.
And you don't want to be one of them. And, you know, they're not educated. They don't think things through, and they're not part of the social justice movement. I mean, that mindset has a cost.
I have totally a different operation on that. I mean, obviously my skills, I hope, were, you know, elsewhere. But to be a plumber and put somebody's house together and 30 years later still have it work and nothing leak, I'd be pretty damn proud of myself.
You should be. But this is the push, this idea that we somehow have to send everybody to college. You know, that's the way to go. And then you get the situation that Kevin and I have talked about many times on the show, where you have industries setting up that cannot find skilled workforces to do, you know, the well-paying work that they need to do in an assembly facility or a manufacturing facility, and you know, those kinds of jobs have been systematically put down, denigrated, insulted by our political culture as, or a significant part of our political culture as, you know, in not really worth listening to.
Well, you also have firms
that's a terrible result.
But you also have people that run firms today that don't know. I mean, my mother, God rest her soul, was pretty bright on a lot of things. Lou, I mean, valedictorian at one of the nastiest high schools now in the city, or that type of thing. And God, we were so much alike; it was scary. I mean, but she would say people, they don't understand their audience. They don't understand what they're doing. She'd be so pissed off when she heard about, you know, kids going to public schools and some teacher complaining they don't get homework, or they don't do their homework, the parents don't help them. And she goes, don't these people understand you've got somebody's kid for 6 hours? That's a lot of time. Just assume to yourself that's all you get. So if you have an assignment, you do the assignment in class, you go over it in class. You don't expect any help from parents. She goes, when I went to school in first grade, they taught kids how to cut their toenails because they didn't expect parents to know how to do it right. They didn't assume they were getting help from anyone. She goes, why are these people think they're getting this help from home? You don't do anything during the day, send kid home with homework, he comes back without the homework, what have you got? Nothing. She goes, I mean, a lot of these kids, if the parents have a store, they have something, they're helping at home, they're helping parents with the stuff, they're not doing school. She goes, but you got them for 6 hours. 6 hours a day, every day of the week is a long time for a three-year-old, or not a three-year-old, a six-year-old. You don't need homework.
So that raises an interesting comment then. Are we looking at parenting styles that have changed that dramatically since the 50s and 60s? And I think the answer to that question is yes.
I think
we expect a lot more helicopter parenting.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that her point was, in bad neighborhoods now with single-parent homes and stuff, it's not that much different than times during a depression, or she grew up in the 20s and 30s. She goes, you didn't assume that the parents even spoke English, for God's sake, let alone help people with homework.
But that's not the way people look at it now.
No, but in some neighborhoods, maybe you should.
No, I agree. No, I'm just saying that parenting styles have changed to the extent that you have, I think the education establishment assumes a much broader parental involvement in day-to-day life,
right?
Because that's what they saw. You know, they saw they came up in many cases with parents that literally hovered over them, you know, all the way through college. I have clients. I don't have clients anymore, but I had clients who would call. One client called me just before I left, saying, "I'm getting phone calls from people's mothers about employment decisions that we're making in the office, who are asking me why certain things happened." And I said, "What do you mean you're getting calls from parents? Are the employees sick?" And he said, No, the guy's right here. His mother's calling me, or her mother is calling me about why Susie didn't get a promotion, or why Billy is getting a bad review.
It's scary.
This is a lot more prevalent than I think even I would have suggested, but it's endemic of a kind of parenting style that I think then translates into, we expect you to be involved in your child's life 24/7.
Well, you can't. Your colleges don't presuppose people have a summer job. I mean, there's stuff going on in the summer. Everybody's, you know. But I know the question is, you know, this discussion is is all well and good. And the question is, what does it have to do with, you know, stacks and jacks or GDP? Well, if you have a city like Lou was talking about, first of all, Lou, I think one of the things about hurricanes, and I'm not an expert, it's not just the barometric pressure and the winds, it's how big the damn thing is. Some that aren't, quote, all that strong are like the ones in Houston that brought 2 feet of rain, you know, and just didn't leave for a week. Others hit, like you're saying, blow the place up and are gone and forgotten in a week if you don't live there. But no matter what, to actually take, well, you ever been to Hoover Dam? I'm sure you have.
I have, yes.
Well, the idea, do you ever stop and see the film in Boulder City where they talk about Boulder City?
Yeah.
And how people essentially came home from work and couldn't recognize their house because there was a house next door there wasn't the day before. I mean, if you have the right people and some prehab working, and you can do this pretty well. But, you know, it's funny, I still love to dabble in remodeling, and a lot of people have stuff, so I developed a group of people, you know, not a big group, that actually can do some of this stuff, Lou. And it is amazing, the idea that Chief's got guys. You know, if you need something done in your house, Chief's got a guy. It's because I love to have people get work, you know, and I like to have people get a nice job done. I don't want people to get ripped off. And plus, I like my guys that I happen to be friends of to make a few bucks. So it's not like I'm, you know, running a remodeling center. I'm not. I just happen to know people who know people who know people, right? And I could probably, tell you what, Lou, I could have five crews. I could easily have five crews and just do that. I mean, because nobody has anybody.
I know. Tell me about it. I have the same. We have a problem out here. I mean, we've got a guy that you know is a competent, smart, you know, good repair guy who does the basic stuff, wiring and drywall and you know basic fixing, basic plumbing, and he is booked up. He's booked up in this neighborhood for 10 months in advance. I mean, it's astounding. But he's quality, and he does a good job, and he's not unreasonably expensive. I would, and he's in business for himself. You know, he has all his own tools and drives his own truck. But, you know, I hearken back to this great book that Jack probably has read called World War Z, which is a science fiction book about, you know, the zombie apocalypse. But what it's useful for, it was a New York Times bestseller and well-reviewed, and what it was reviewed for, what it was worth, was a fantastic discussion of public policy when you have a societal breakdown. And what there's a long discussion in the book about trying to retrain people who had been working in this digital world, you know, doing public relations or doing graphic design or whatever, trying to retrain those people to glaze windows. And yeah. Fix toilets and you know, do basic metalworking. And it's hilarious. You know, I mean, basic manual labor. And these people just were not equipped for it physically, but that they could be trained up for that. But more importantly, they weren't equipped for it psychologically. And the impact that has on your, you know, your sort of your personal perception of your value and everything else, when you come out of an economy that's and a culture that has trained you to think that those jobs are not really worth your time.
When you look at a place that's a rat hole, and you walk out and it looks terrific, or when you look at a hunk of metal coming in the door at Pullman, and 6 months later some beautiful railroad car goes out, I'm sitting there. I to me, it's like having a great trade for one of my clients.
Yes. I think that's exactly right. And we don't do. I mean. We started training people on these kinds of things early on when I was much younger. Remember the model kits that people would put together? You know, I mean, every kid did that. Every kid, by the time I was in third or fourth grade, every one of my friends had the experience of assembling an airplane model.
Jack, you're not going to understand what I'm talking about.
Else.
But that explains a lot about Lou. I hear you really like that glue.
Well, the butrate paint and dope that we used to paint the models. Yeah, that was great.
Did you ever actually come across a Jack? You're not gonna know what the hell I'm talking about. Lou, did you actually come across a glue sniffer?
I mean, I've only No, I don't think I've ever met anybody that actually was a victim of glue sniffing. By the time I was in high school, the kids that were really damaged from drugs were damaged from things like heroin.
See, I never came across that. I remember in college with a couple guys that were glue sniffers, but I think that actually destroyed enough brain cells. We didn't come back from that.
It's like huffing.
Yeah.
You know, it's to do with which Jack probably also doesn't know about. But yeah, every kid had that experience of putting something together. And you know, the idea of accomplishing something through a physical kind of task and a job through to completion. And that's saying something. And you got that sense of completion.
Well, the question is why isn't there in this country, when you talk about the employment rates or the unemployment, you know, why don't, I mean, maybe the neighborhood didn't do it, I don't know, but why doesn't somebody, you know, and that's so odd about today's world, Lou, is everything is right there at your fingertips, the internet and everything, and yet people sometimes are more ignorant of the news than I remember many times in my lifetime. I mean, you know, it's hard to take a drink out of a fire hydrant, and if you don't want, I mean, if people used to read the paper going to work and read the evening paper at home and watch the news, I think half those people you couldn't Google, you know, somebody's name from 40 years ago and get that kind of instant type of thing. But by and large, I don't know that people are that more, I don't know, an awful lot of people say I don't pay attention to anything. I don't know that people are all that into, but my question is why doesn't this country know that there's 2,000 plasterboard carpenter jobs available in that area for the next 6 months and have people shoot down there? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, in some places, you know, those kinds of jobs were a huge draw. Vegas, for example, had a consistent boom. But I think, honestly, that kind of work, again, has been, I think, denigrated by the popular culture. It's hard. I mean, it's physically demanding.
Yeah.
People just don't have the other thing is, like you said, the social safety net is sufficient. You're not desperate enough to do it.
Well, now, tying it back together, considering the fact that you can't, I mean, I was on a barge tour where they were talking about every new lock and dam is like, you know, 2 million carpenter hours. You know, if it's designed for the big, you know, 12 barges and so forth. Well, that's a lot, Lou. Where are you going to get the train guys? But if you look at it, if you can, like Pullman was a big enough company, and they, back in their day, they did everything. I mean, they made the upholstery, they made the padding. There was nothing in the car basically that they didn't do. They're their own foundry. They didn't have a steel mill. That's the only thing they didn't have. But they had their own foundry, and they didn't anticipate. I mean, if you and I went and got a job there at age 18, we were picking crap up for 2 years. And by the way, Lou, what do you want to do? Well, actually, your nationality kind of determined what you did. If you were Swedish, you were a paper hanger, or you worked in the upholstery. If you were, I don't know what the Irish guys did. The women did the cut the wires, and I think the Irish guys were welded. I don't know, but every nationality kind of had their spot. In fact, Dick Butkus, his old man, worked at Pullman. He was Lithuanian, so he was an electrician. And all Lithuanians were electricians. I mean, so you didn't really have to speak the language because the guys you were with would tell you what to do. So you didn't even have to. If all the Swedish guys, half of them couldn't speak English, all did, you know, the inside carpentry work and the painting and the. They actually used to have plaster, and those cars used to weigh so much, Lou. Half of the diners had six wheel trucks because they were actually plastering those things, plastering paint and wallpaper.
So those jobs where you didn't have to speak English, where you had the time to move up through a sort of apprentice to journeyman to master craftsman kind of level or kind of progression, are those kinds of jobs gone now?
Pretty much.
We don't have that kind of work culture now, but. We have a definite need for that kind of work,
right?
It's just a different kind of work, but we definitely have a need for it. So what's going to happen? I mean,
you actually work in these areas. I mean, I don't. What happens if they don't want me at my age? But what if Jack shows up today at the carpenters union and says, hey, I want to be a carpenter. Where can I be an apprentice? They tell them to go pound sand, or they say, come back next Tuesday, we got a guy for you. I mean, what do they do? I have no idea.
It depends. It It depends. Well, I don't know. Has Jack, have you ever done that? Showed up at a hiring hall or to start, you know, apprenticing in that kind of a position?
No, I haven't. I've worked in stuff like that, kind of, but nothing like that. I've never gone there and like tried to get a job like that.
So typically what happens, Chief, is unions will put out, through their apprentice operations, they will put out a call for people saying, hey, you can come join. We're running these classes. We're recruiting these kinds of positions. Here's what the pay is. We'll start the training. Either you, in some cases, the individual applicant has to put a small payment down, but they will be trained. I did some work for carpenters and for electrical workers.
Lou, hold that thought, buddy. We come back. We're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about this digital tax from France. This is wild. SP Futures up 7.25. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howes, Mr. Will Michaels. X Silverman on the board, doing a good job. S&P futures up 650. NASDAQ futures up 1850. Dow futures up 87. So we had the Fed signal a rate cut yesterday. Cross currents in the economy, you know, blah, 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 which means he's probably going to take back the last quarter point raise, just to make everybody happy. Although the people want a half a cut, probably won't be happy. Anyway, oil's up 15 cents, still over $60. $60.58. Had a good rally yesterday. Well, if you're long oil, it's a good rally. If you're buying gasoline, it's not such a good rally. DAX down 10, call that flat. FTSE down 3, call that flat. CAC round up 11, that's 0.2%. That at least gets a little percentage. Nikkei, these guys have come around. They were down earlier in the week. Nikkei up 110, 0.5%. Shanghai up 2, call that flat. Hang Seng up 227, so not much going on there. Like I said before, West Texas up 16 cents to 60.59. Brent up to 67.22. So that spread is now... actually, the spread is down to 670s. That spread has come in a lot as West Texas has rallied more than Brent. Gold drove a big rally today. Wow, up $11, 1423. Yes! Silver up, you're not supposed to cheer about your stuff a little bit, I will cheer anyway. Silver up 7 cents, 1530. And we've got the bonds, we've got 10-year yield, 2.07. And we've got the Japan, minus 0.14. The Bund, minus 0.27, which is actually up a little bit from minus 0.30 a couple of weeks ago. Jack, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, buddy.
Well, this sports weather traffic is presented by Luckbox Magazine. Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. On the traffic standpoint, it's looking pretty good so far. Traffic building on the Stevenson, Eisenhower, Kennedy. The Edens looks pretty good. The southbound expressways are looking pretty good as well. We do have an accident to report on the Kennedy East at Kimball Ave. And that's the only accident. Do want to say that Taste of Chicago is going on right now, so there are a couple closures inside the city of Chicago. Jackson Boulevard between Michigan Ave and Lakeshore Drive. Congress Parkway between Congress Plaza Drive and Columbus Drive. And Columbus Drive between Roosevelt Road and Monroe Drive. Sorry about that.
Jack, give me any idea how big or small that thing is compared to what it used to be like 20 years ago?
Taste of Chicago?
Yeah, I know it's smaller. Is it a lot smaller?
I'm not sure. I mean, I know I'm not a Chicago person, but I have heard of it and I do know about it. So I do believe that it is still a big size, but maybe not as big as
it used to be. That the thing culminated on July 3rd when they had this massive fireworks display in Monroe Harbor, and they would literally get a million people for that. And then they said one year a couple people got a knife going back to the... Ellen, they said, screw it, no more fireworks, and we're cutting it down. So I don't know how much they cut it down.
Yeah, this is only a four-day event. Started yesterday, actually.
Well, it was like 10 before.
Only 4 days. It started yesterday, and it ends on Sunday.
There were restaurants that made more in the 10 days there than they did in the rest of the restaurant the entire year.
Wow.
Anyway, I interrupted. Sorry.
Well, it's a beautiful day in Chicago today. It's 73 degrees currently, sunny, and a high of 76. In Phoenix, it's going to be very hot. 87 degrees, partly cloudy, with a high of 112. In sports, it was a very unusual day. There were no professional games going on. The NFL, NBA, and NHL are all out of season, and the MLB concluded its All-Star break. The MLB returns tonight with Astros and Rangers, while the Cubs, White Sox, and Diamondbacks all resume tomorrow.
There's only like one game today, right?
Yeah, there's only one game.
How are we going to get is, we've been, as usual, my style is to scatter all over the damn place, but in fact, there is somewhat of a theme. We seem like, I was mentioning yesterday, I don't know if you had a chance to, is when you have growth, like in the OEX pit, for instance, where I was, when you went from 50,000 contracts a day to 75 to 100, and even if you, we got to 300, we were the biggest exchange that pit in the world, except for the New York Stock Exchange. It was bigger than the rest of the Cboe, bigger than the Amex. And when you have that kind of growth and that kind of level of virtually everybody to their skills can make a living. I'm not saying be a millionaire or anything like that. You can find a spot. You could be a guy who just traded out of money calls or just traded out of money puts, or you could just trade butterflies, or I know, or just, you know, you could trade reversals. You could just trade against spoos. There were guys that wanted the in the monies versus the, you know, versus the S&P, and they played the 1-5. There are all kinds of people that did all kinds of things when you had some kind of growth going. And then as the growth started to drop, it became more that if you bought something from somebody maybe in the pit, and if the thing went up that day, you had a good day, and he or she didn't, and you start to kind of almost cannibalize to the point where if there's not enough business, and I really think, Lou, despite, I guess I'm going to disparage the president, but then again, you're always campaigning in that job, so I have more sympathy than most for somebody who's constantly saying how well you're doing, whether you are or you aren't, because no matter how good you are doing, somebody always is saying you're doing lousy, whether you are or you aren't. So it's, I get the game. But I just get the feeling that coming out of the 2007 recession, and clearly before then, because I didn't think that was a one-off, I just get this feeling that we haven't broken out of into the idea that we're, everybody can get ahead. It's like every time somebody gets ahead, I get the feeling that somebody got pulled back down. And is it just a feeling I have by being old and grumpy? Or I don't get the 60s feeling where actually this year everybody in the neighborhood, based on, you know, different talents and different jobs and whatever, someone had an okay year and not at the benefit of somebody else or not at the benefit or at the detraction of somebody else. You see it with the states and in the cities and even the Fed to a certain extent. We're gonna raise taxes for these people and like not for these people, or we're gonna cut these benefits and kick them back to the states because we know the regressive taxes in the states and we want to make sure that the income tax side for our buddies. And I'm not disparaging that because now in the states you see let's tax these people or Bernie Sanders, let's tax Wall Street in relation to students. And in Lou, in a perfect world, if we want to help student loans, we should just do it. Everybody should just do it out of the general coffers. It shouldn't be let's tax guys who run towboats in the river. What has that got to do with student loans? You know what I'm saying? We're at this period where I just get this feeling that every time somebody makes a step forward, it's because somebody else got kicked back a step. Am I totally wrong with this or not?
I think we are to a large extent victims of what I call sort of perception bias. In the sense that the kind of optimism that you saw during the 50s and 60s was widespread in part because you did not have a lot of bad news coming over the airwaves about whatever event was going on that day, or you didn't have publicity being given to every person who stood up and said, "Hey, this discriminates against me," and with this sort of focus on tribalism and identity politics. That's a huge issue with identity politics. Identity politics fractures these kinds of perceptions because in truth, a rising tide doesn't lift all boats at the same time. The economy right now is humming. It may be humming for a bad reason in terms of federal injection of dollars, but the unemployment rate, to have a sustained unemployment rate below 4%. Is something that a lot of people didn't think was possible.
Okay, Lou, before we, let's sort of, that's a whole conversation from you and me, because if you look at the last two columns, the unemployed being defined as people that are looking for work, and the column next to that defined as we don't know what the hell they're doing, the number in the two columns is continued to go up. And the way these guys count, When employment was, quote, a problem, by the way, I understand, it's way better than it was 10 years ago, but if unemployment is a problem, okay, the how can I put this? Cliff Notes version, too late. The federal government, lazy asses that they are, have decided that, in a large part, the people that are looking for work are the people that are on the unemployment rolls. So if you roll off after 6 months, roll off the roll, they assume you have stopped looking for work and put you in column B. All right. But when the economy was bad, the unemployment went for a year, and the federal government picks up the second 6 months. The first 6 months, I believe, is on the state, and the second 6 months, the Fed ponies up money for the states to do that. Somehow, I don't know if they share it or what they do, but I'm not a genius on it. But the fact is, so when you drop off, whether you have a job or don't, now I understand that there are nothing but help wanted signs and all this $10-$11 range that Carl Denninger is always talking about. But what I'm talking about, Lou, is there's a generic growth that you used to see, like, again, I'm not in the 60s or 70s, where the Lou in Chief hamburger stand just starts selling more hamburgers. And we got five more people working in the firm. We were able to give everybody a 3% raise or 5% raise. It wasn't because we bought Jack's hamburger stand and laid off all his people. You know, I mean, there was generic growth. But a lot of it had to do with the population expanding internally. Okay, I'm thinking that was a lot to do with it, which it isn't anymore. I mean, there's a lot of demographic factors to it, but somehow or another, that's not what I'm seeing. I'm seeing this company getting ahead, or Merck, or who's the other guy? Pfizer getting ahead because I know two or three people that have done medical devices and even small drugs that have been prevented to making it to market because they sold some marketing deal to Merck that never did their product in 5 years, tried to sue them, and all of a sudden they're gone. That kind of crap, Lou, is very detracting to people doing anything here. I don't see the generic growth. I really don't, to where everybody just says, in my firm, we had a good year. We didn't take over anybody else's firm. We didn't lay anybody off. And guess what? Everybody got a raise, and I hired 10 more people. I don't see very much of that at all, to be honest with you. I mean, in some of the areas...
It's out there.
But it's in your... It's in, like, stuff like security. It's in internet security. It's stuff that's useless, Lou. I mean, I don't want a plane on mine or anybody else's on to blow up. But the 58,000 people who work for TSA, as a society, it's useless.
I'm don't get me started on TSA.
But I'm saying there's 300,000 people in this country that are in law enforcement or security. When you walk, I've been doing this arbitration. I'm walking through this building next door. There's four security guards standing in the lobby. Didn't have to have any 10 years ago. Those jobs are not the guys. They're doing a good job, and thank God for them. But the idea is, it's useless, isn't it?
Well, to the extent that you say they're not individually producing anything,
right?
Maybe that's the argument.
Well, yeah.
I mean, what they're doing is they're enabling other people to produce.
But I mean, we didn't used to need that.
But we didn't used to need a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, the economy adjusts. The point that I want to make here is that and this let's go back to close the loop on our discussion pre-break. The kinds of production jobs that you and I think of as producing something, producing tangible results, those jobs are out there. But we are, Kevin and I again have talked about this, we are watching a large-scale shift in the American labor market and American workforce. And these, you know, the kinds of positions that you're seeing now, the $10 to $15 an hour jobs, those jobs are still there. But they're there because of this dislocation, and they're changing because of this dislocation. The idea of the knowledge worker, the idea of that certain jobs are going to pay really well, and the rest of them are just going to kind of be middling stuff because we're going to use automation, we're going to use AI, we're going to use some other things to make up the kind of manpower intensive work that we had before. So we're seeing that kind of a transition going on in the economy. And I think for a lot of people, it's true. Those jobs, you're not going to see the kind of continuing growth in certain industries. Certain industries you are. Food service industries, for example. I mean, I've got a kid that's moving his way up in that environment. But other kinds of service industries, no, it's gonna flatline. And it's gonna stay flatline until we shake out the impact of AI and data automation and big data.
Well, that's sort of my point, Lou, not my point today, but the show's kind of run together for me a little bit. But when you talk about counting for economics, okay, right now, if you live upstairs and we got a two flat and you got the Lou clan up there or whatever you got, you know, whatever you got going up there, and we got the chief clan down on the first floor, and I call upstairs and I go, Hey, Lou, I got this turkey on sale. I got to cook it. Get your ass down here, bring the family, and guess what? It'll be Thanksgiving in July, and you guys pile down. Lou, there's nothing there to count economically, okay? What I'm saying is if all of a sudden you call me up and say, hey, Tripoli Tap has got turkey in July, and we're going to grab your guys, grab our guys, and 8 of us will go over there, and we'll sit down and have a turkey dinner. That's counted, Lou. So what I'm saying is it's still the same function. We still ate turkey. But if I cook it, it's not counted. If they cook it, it is. So you got to be careful when you look at when you say growth has shifted to service industries.
Okay. Oh no, I'm not. I'm not saying growth has shifted there. I'm saying that there are still those yes. kinds of jobs. But the short answer is, you know, what the kind of union hiring, the kind of apprentice system that we had in place for many decades, that still exists, but it takes a lot more into those jobs to get into those jobs. It takes a lot more smarts.
Right.
It takes a lot more basic training. And this goes back again.
But people can do it, Lou. People can do it.
I wish we had a draft.
People can do it. I honestly wish, I would love to see, I'll use the term draft for some percentage of the population, but at the end of your 8 weeks, whatever it is, 6 or 8 weeks basic, a few weeks just so if you had to be called up for arms, for service, for real service, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, you'd be ahead of the game. You'd be like maybe the Jewish population in that regard. But if you that just wasn't for you, that you could peel off and do something else. You know what I would love to do? There's a few things I'd love to do in life in a bucket list. And, of course, they're not like anybody else's bucket list where they want to go places and, you know, drink booze in some other town or something. That's not necessarily me, but booze part maybe. But the I would love to have an experiment with one of my buddies, good friend. Well, we're roommates in college, for God's sake. One of the smartest guys, other than Lou, I've ever come across. He was a PhD in chemistry, worked for NOAA. He was one of the guys in the DC-8 flyover. You know, we don't hear about the ozone holes anymore. Does that mean we don't want to hear about them, or they went away? Anyway, he would.
They fixed a lot of it, in fact.
Well, anyway, he used to fly in the DC-8s over to poles, doing the ozone holes, and then. Then he was in this, let's figure out where all the action in CO2 is going.
He sounds a lot smarter than me, quite frankly.
But, you know, it's interesting when he talked, and the weird part about all the global warming and everything, and, you know, you can say who did what and who did where. He said the biggest single threat is, and CO2 on land is not that big of a deal. You might get a little more, you know, he said, but for whatever reason, the oceans are having trouble dealing with it. And mm-hmm. nobody explains it properly, because theoretically CO2 plants eat it up and make oxygen and blah blah blah. There's a circular swing to it. But he said when they started doing these oxygen flyovers, the place they got the biggest oxygen plume ever was at Yellowstone in Yellowstone Park, like 2 years after the fires, because it was all new growth. And you go over there and the oxygen needle just went off the chart on the plane. But if you get onto the Amazon, where everybody thinks, God, you're going to lose oxygen if a jungle comes down, because, well, first of all, you don't want the jungle coming down because it's an environment that is part of the world environment. He said, but actually, there's no oxygen creation down there because the amount of oxygen the gazillion plants are making are more than made up for. The stuff is decaying on the ground and basically getting eaten by termites doing the exact opposite, right? So you go over it, and there's nothing there in terms of an oxygen. But he thought one of the most interesting things we could do here is every year plant 1 million trees. So I would love to see, Lou, if we could get a group, summer kids, if we had the dough, which somebody dropped $1 billion on my doorstep, if we could take an area of forest preserve, maybe 2 square miles, clean out a lot of the underbrush, which you'd want for fire retention and stuff, anyway, and plant, you know, however many trees it would go in that area, and 2 years later fly by it to see if we could actually change an environment a little bit. And if we did that all over the place, maybe we could turn back this clock a little bit.
Well, I mean, you could make a pretty good case, just on that note, you could make a pretty good case for reforestation farther and farther north because of the climate change and that it's getting warmer. You could certainly make a good case for planting, say, you know, in Canada, There's actually, I just saw a survey about maybe 18 months ago, maybe Jack could find it, that said there's a heck of a lot more trees in the world than we thought there was. More trees, like by a factor of 10, in terms of their ability to in terms of our of the planet's ability to deal with the carbon dioxide bloom. But that his point about the seas is exactly right. I mean, and that's we've got to deal with dissolved CO2 in the water, and we've got to come up with a we should be looking at trying to manage that a little bit better, because if the oceans decide to manage it, you know, by their own mechanism, which nobody understands, we could see some really significant climate changes. If, for example, you know, the Gulf Stream slows to a crawl, or we lose that movement of warm water to cold water completely. I think the idea of a wide scale, a wide scale drafted force or force that went to work for public good over the course of you know 3 or 4 years of their early lives is a great idea. Now, my friends, as I said, I've said many times on the show, my friends who are generals want no part of a draft force. They don't want to have to deal with it. They don't want to have to deal with the fact we'd only hold people for maybe 2 years, and they don't. It's not long enough for them to think they can train a professional army.
Well, I would say though, that I would want to do. I would start. See, all these programs, these ideas that I get, you get, other people get. The difference. I mean, one of the differences I think between a lot of where we all agree on this show, right? Scary as it may seem, is I try and get people with totally different views than me on here. Because what good is it? You ever learn anybody from anybody agreed with you? You ever learn anything from anybody agreed with you all the time, Lou? I never have.
No. Although when I start hearing people agree with me a lot, it makes me think I'm wrong.
you and Kevin are so alike, it's scary. But the what I'm saying is, I don't want this as a. I could be. This could be, you know, what was a Chief's Folly, which they call the what's the canal up the Erie Canal? It was Seward's Folly.
Seward's Folly was the purchase of Alaska.
What was Clinton's Folly? Was the not Bill Clinton, but Clinton's Folly was the Erie Canal, right?
I believe that's right.
Anyway, this could be Chief's Folly, but I don't want it. I don't want it. You know, AOC bitching with some old grumpy white guy in New York over there. I want to just get some money in the state, and let's let these people be National Guard people. Okay, let's start it out with 400 people one summer and just see how it goes. And if it goes okay, let's do 1,000 people next summer. And if it's a bad idea at the end of 3 years, Chief, you tried it. Because my grandfather always used to tell me, Tom, anybody who tries and fails is better than a guy who never tried at all. I want to try something like that. And it may, let's get some of these kids out of these horrible neighborhoods where bullets are whizzing by their heads. I mean, let's get, you know, and get to like my stepfather, who was, you know, could have been the world's grumpiest man. He said, in the Army, one thing about the Army, he goes, you learn to get along with people you don't necessarily like because you have a job to do collectively. And he says, it gets you out of your comfort zone and you learn new stuff.
Yep.
I mean, he didn't say, he goes, I wouldn't want to stay there all that long, but by and large, that's what happens. I mean,
that's the whole point of a drafted force is the egalitarian nature of it. It takes everybody, regardless of social background, and you all are reduced lowest common denominator. You're held there for a while. You're trained to look at each other in that context. You're given a picture of working for something bigger than yourself. You're physically and mentally challenged, and at the end of that process. I mean, I've said this before, the greatest education entity, the most successful education entity in the United States is the Department of Defense. It takes people from all walks of life, from all different kinds of cultures, puts them into a system, trains them to a universal standard that gets them to show up for work on time, looking proper and you know, maintaining a certain sets of standards. It gets everybody to that, and it gets them there in about 7 or 8 weeks, and then it pumps them back out into a system where they can function, and they're motivated, and they get things done. We don't have a mechanism like that in the rest of the culture.
And no, we don't.
It would be nice to tap into it.
Well, real quick, we got like a minute left, but as we've been talking about things being, I what I was talking about earlier, and you, well, we both were talking about the idea that right now it's hard to anybody advance seemingly. Well, my business, the big firms only advance by putting the small firms out of business. It's not like we're all growing together, right? I mean, the business isn't growing.
Okay.
But I mean, it's this thing with France now, digital tax and American tech giants defying U.S. trade threat. Well, despite likes, dislikes, politics, the fact is we have a president who's decided we're gonna move ahead here even if other people aren't gonna move with us, be it tariffs or redoing trade deals. And I'm not saying the deals weren't lousy, whatever. But the point is we're gonna make things more for us. And now France is hitting back somehow and saying, well, that's fine. Now we're gonna do this for us. We're gonna put a 3% on American tech giants for the stuff they do here no matter what. Okay, so to me, Lou, that's part of the zero-sum game.
I didn't get the impression that was in retaliation. I got the impression that was a revenue move.
Well, whatever, but I'm saying it's France doesn't have the growth. They're trying to get some money from here. We don't have the growth. We're trying to get money from tariffs. We got a president who loves tariffs. Who the hell likes tariffs? But I'm saying is that when you're not all growing together, that's the crap that happens is basically what I'm saying.
Well, sure, and it's easy for France to say, which needs the money, because
Well, we got a dash. We'll talk about this next week, buddy. You have a good weekend. SP Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 19. We got a rally going. Be right back. Mr. Farhi Hamzy.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie. Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. We should have Farry calling in a minute. Interesting conversation with Lou, as always. What we try and do on the show a lot is go back and forth between the economic theory, of such that there is, and there's a lot of it, and what's happening in the market, and what's happening to people in different walks of life, looking at the CPI numbers, which I think one of those numbers comes out today. I'll look at it. Is it PPI or CPI today? One of the two. I forgot to look. Look at an economic calendar or somewhere. Whether those numbers are the things that really affect people here or not affect people, are the numbers accurate? Are people making policy based on the right numbers? Are they making policy that is good for everyone, just for a few people? All this stuff certainly comes together in people's, like, you know, daily lives as best they can. And then there's the market, which is a sort of a grade on this. Obviously, how well you're doing in your business is a grade because all politics is personal, correct? I mean, and all economics is personal. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, where the whole thing sort of comes together, where the rubber meets the road. And now, Farry, how are you, buddy?
Hello?
Hello, hey man, how are you?
I'm good. I survived. All is well.
Survived what?
Tall blondes.
All right. Well, you're still surviving.
There was a campaign of tall blondes down here.
What, you were sitting at a table with six tall blondes and the check?
Well, the problem was the boat. Once you start shopping for the boat, I don't know these tall blondes hang out. They're near the boat yards. The moment you start shopping, they show up.
Well, when you're a Major League Baseball, minor league baseball player, they're with you because
baseball.
They're with you because you're handsome.
I've played softball like twice in my life.
Yeah,
come on.
They're with you because you're handsome and you have potential.
Handsome is a difference.
Yeah,
that's
now you
different.
Now
potential,
you
of course. My grandpa had nine wives. They see a lot of potential, of course.
Yeah.
If you can handle nine wives, you're doing okay.
What does Audrey say? He may look short, but when he sits on his wallet, he's pretty tall.
There you got it. So yeah. What's going on? Don't shoot me some last-minute news item. You know me, I don't like breaking news. I like analysis of the news.
So I'm
just getting to my desk.
All right,
okay?
So the question is, if we get this quarter point rate cut,
It's priced in.
I understand. Is world hunger going to be solved?
Nothing is going to be solved. I like the fact he answered to the House members that, no, I will serve out my 4 years. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. That's what it's supposed to be.
Well, I was thinking of you.
Right.
Of course, I was over at Audrey's, and she watches all this. Well, it's not wacky for her because she's in the business. She loves watching the house staging and the, you know, remodeling places because you get ideas on those shows. And Aud is actually a stager as well, that if you want somebody to come in and make your house maybe all cluttered and everything look better for a showing, I mean, she's really good at that stuff. Anyway, so she loves to watch these shows. That's the downside. One of them, I don't know, she went off to show a house and the thing continued on. It was this young couple looking for a yacht.
Okay, gotcha.
And they're going
yacht
hunting, and they're from Florida. On the other side, though. They're over on the Miami side.
Yeah, the old side, yeah.
Yeah, well, they were a young couple, and the guy, I don't know, I think he got his money the old-fashioned way. He inherited it, right? And
yes, that's one sure way of becoming very rich.
And
yes.
So he's got the fashion model wife.
It's called being born right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Start marrying right, you know, Marrying well, or born well. It is born well. That's it.
Otherwise known on the trading floor as the Lucky Sperm Club.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
Anyway, so they're out, and they didn't know she.
We're not sure what Trump falls in that category, by the way.
Well, she wanted the motor yacht, and he wanted the sailing yacht. And he wanted something he could party with, but then she didn't like any of his friends because they were a bunch of drunks. I'm thinking, and then they got the guy who's the yacht salesman, is this old grizzled dude. And he's listening to this stuff in one ear and out the other, and all he wants is a check. Like, this is special. So, of course, they want like a 55-footer, so immediately shows him, you know, sales hasn't changed. He shows him like a 57-footer. Of course, a couple of more feet in a boat is a big deal. I mean, I know that. So it's got the three staterooms, a big, huge, you know, master stateroom and two other staterooms for very private for another two couples and the whirlpool on the front and so forth and spot for her to get her
son. How much?
Oh, it was a couple mil, you know, $1.7 million or something. Good. But then, of course, there was one that there was a demo yacht that they could give them to him for $1.4 million.
It was demo. They took it out on weekends. We could give it to you for, you know, darn excellent price of $1.8 million.
Well, the interesting part is the cockpit.
And we'll pay the taxes.
Well, the cockpit, the thing actually had a stick like you'd have on those old planes.
Mm-hmm.
Where the stick, all you had to do was move the stick around, and all the maneuvering thrusters would kick in and not kick in. So if you pulled next to the dock, and your the dock is to your right. You move the thing to your right, and all your maneuvering thrusters shoved you. You know, this guy had no more business driving that boat than I do being a jockey. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, but I don't know what they settled on. I got bored because they were such a pain in the ass watching them. But they never got to the sailboat because she was whining about didn't want to do the work. So which I can understand. But I don't know what he ended up with. But it wasn't going to be the under 55. I'm sure they were going to end up with at least a 60. They were getting talked up pretty good.
Right.
But how do you get on one with three massive staterooms, Fari, and then drop down to one with, like, only two? I mean, how can I? And the bar's half as big. And this one had the bar that you entered from the outdoor patio, and the kitchen was right there and a whole bit. You can't. The interesting part about those things when I used to go up to Saugatuck once in a while for the 4th of July because one of our friends owned a house up there. And it's a big yacht spot on the lake. There's really never any spots in Lake Michigan to go anywhere with a boat, even though it's a beautiful lake, there's nowhere to go.
Usually my cousin had a small boat, nothing fancy, but we would take it into the river.
Yeah.
Just for a dinner or something, you know, early dinner, right after the market closed, we would come into the lock and all that. But what were you going to go on the lake? You would go to the filter section, you know, the filter, water filtration thing, go around it a couple of times, they blew the horn at you because you're too close.
Yeah.
You go to Venetka, you come back, and just, what else is going on? Oh, Wilmette. I'm sorry, Wilmette.
Yeah.
And come back. Well, and there's nothing going on.
Saugatuck is one of the.
You go in, it's just like one dinky restaurant. So.
Well, there's one. It's a river there. So on a big weekend in the summer, New Buffalo's got a harbor for you. Saugatuck's got a harbor. You know, if you go farther up, you know, there's a couple. But the thing is, they got all these gazillion-dollar kitchens in these things. Every guy's got a Weber out of a dock. Dinner on the water. Anyway, so Fari, what are we? We're going to get our rate cut somehow. We're going to figure out that it's not another 20 days of manna from heaven. Because if anybody can figure out much difference between 2.5 and 2.25, good luck with that. We're already pumping money into the system at over 4.5%, which we don't need when growth isn't anywhere near there. We're keep lying on the CPI. We've got Europe somehow still need minus 3.3% interest rates, and they're not doing much. I don't see any this happening. You look at these numbers, job numbers, average them week to week. If anything, we're probably averaging 10,000 less than we were 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Still percolating along. So I don't see any sort of change here, do you? I mean, you look at the numbers, it looks like nothing's happened for the last 8 years, 5 years. I mean, in terms of trend. I mean, obviously, when you had jobs, we haven't had any bad
months. What are you talking about? Unemployment data?
The unemployment data you can't even look at. Because if you look at the two
columns. So why does it not change? Please be particular so I can follow you.
I'm saying we're
I don't even drink coffee anymore.
I'm saying on average, we're bumping along at 150 to 160 to 165 a month. I mean,
you mean non-farm payroll?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the last 2 months, we had a 72 and a 240. You add them together, divide by two, you're right where the two predictions were. You're 310 divided by two.
Who said we were going to change?
Well, we.
Why did you buy that bull?
Well, I'm just saying I would like to see us.
Just because the Grumpino said so?
Well, I get that part. But I'm,
yeah, okay. So the evidence is not really not there. I think this was a political compromise and keep him off his back.
You know,
the numbers are a little bit soft. They're not soft enough. Here's my issue. They're not soft enough for the Fed to ease at the market all-time high. When was the last time we eased at the all-time market high?
Well, kind of never.
Exactly. You and I are students of history. Remember irrational exuberance talk? Okay, you know, they were on guard for that, and then they still even missed it.
Well, but look at,
for us to fuel it up here, all he wants to juice this up is for election.
Well, let me ask you this, Frank.
Grumpino doesn't care about the economy.
No, he doesn't.
He just wants to juice this up for the election. Remember, stock market is not the economy.
All right, let me ask you this.
Look at the change in the payouts and the payrolls. I mean, the hourly work hasn't changed?
No.
Yeah, it's just flat 34 area, or maybe there's hours and there. And the change is like around 2.5%, maybe near 3%, you know, 2%. That's not going to, if you haven't had any effective raises in 10, 20 years, this stuff is not going to move your needle.
No, here's.
That's why you have the down and out following game as a hope. It's like a messenger from God. You know, maybe he may pull a rabbit out of his, you know what, but, because they have given up. And then when you get down and out, you show up as I won't call them deplorable. You can, but you know, you're in a blue state. You can call them deplorables. But that's when you guys show up. Look at the pictures. Look at the people who hang out behind them. Disasters. So.
Well, let me ask you a technical question for you. Economic,
uh-oh,
technical, monetary.
Oh,
policy.
Murray. Oh, Murray.
Yeah,
okay,
monetary policy question. I mean, I think if you look at, well, certainly my years of watching and reading about monetary policy, there is nothing anywhere.
And also sharing adult privileges with your friends from Chicago Fed.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's right. Well, that's, you know, you learn on some of this stuff.
Folks, we got to give you the right perspective. If you don't know the chief, this is your first coming to these interviews, we got to give you the right perspective.
Yes.
And I'm glad to do that for you.
Yes. But so, well, let's say, for instance, you know, no man is an island. I mean, and this is the one thing that if you take, and I always try and do this because even though he wasn't my favorite professor, he was pretty good. Milton Friedman.
Yes.
I mean, but whenever, unlike the people on TV who like to quote him, who never met him, okay, who never had a class with him, they like to quote him. But the quotes that you get, you need to temper with the times. You know, because Milton Friedman would actually say, as he did in class one day, that you don't have to worry about governmental debt because if the country is considered a house, you know, if Fari owes $50,000 to his wife, who cares? The household balance sheet is the same, correct? So in Milton Friedman's view, if the government owned money to the citizens of the country,
the citizens may be correct,
right? But now,
so how about foreign?
Well, okay, that's my point.
Foreign government.
That's what I'm saying. So if you take what he said there out of context and just said governmental debt doesn't matter, you got to put in the caveat that now you're not only borrowing money from your people, you're borrowing from other people as well. So you got to add that in there, right? So, okay,
right,
what I'm saying is about monetary policy right now, you've got a president who focuses, for some reason, all over this trade crap. I mean, he's all over this, so we're getting raw deals with his economic. So when you have and you and I just talked on one level of the chessboard, you're already very accommodative. Your money supply is growing way faster than the economy. There isn't a shred anywhere of somebody saying, I went to get a loan and the money wasn't there. I mean, there's no hint whatsoever of lack of credit. The lack of credit pricing and credit cards and everything proves that whatever they're doing isn't even working because they're not going down at all. But on the table now, if you and I are the Fed people, on the table it drops this, you know, bomb or firing arrow of Robin Hood's times. It says, oh, by the way, the other idiots in the world are minus 0.3% and minus 0.1%, and that's causing everybody there, maybe because of their screw-ups, to be buying dollars so they can put money in the bank here. So you're actually increasing money supply that way even more. Plus, you're driving up the price of the dollar, which is driving up the price of foreign goods, of U.S. goods, to the point where this trade balance you're trying to negate is actually getting worse despite all the crap you're trying to do to it, tariffs and everything else. It's actually getting worse. So if you're the president, you're going, wait a minute, you guys got to help me here. You got to get our rates down to 1%. Because that's not happening, even though going down to 1% is probably a really ignorant idea. Because somebody else is doing it, we got to do it. You know, it's sort of like, you know, somebody else in the neighborhood just, you know, poured black paint on their white house. We need to do that too because now we match or something. So, I mean, how much of other people's bad decisions do our people have to follow, I guess is the question, just because now you've got somewhat of an inequality. How's that for a question?
Yeah, I have no clue. I'm legally blonde, especially this early in the morning.
But you admit it is somewhat of a new wrinkle.
My pay grade, you know that.
But I mean, it is somewhat of a new wrinkle.
No kidding.
Yeah.
But you've been at it for like 6-7 years. That would be. That's okay.
See, I'd say the principles still matter. If those guys have got dug their own rat hole, and the last thing I want to do is fall in the same rat hole. That would be me.
Yeah.
But that, you know, I'm not there. You know. Because I don't.
I just want to know where we're going to be next year this night. That's what I want to know. But everything is slowing down.
Well,
I want to know what Trump will pitch at us then.
They're your buddies at, I think it was BlackRock the other day. Your buddies at BlackRock had a.
My buddies BlackRock. Okay,
yeah. Uh-huh. It was a headline. Who knows what they actually said? But CNBC was economy will continue to slow, but. Market's still a buy. Okay. Now, I'm going to say that this week, it appears to me, they are correct. Next week, maybe they are correct. It's hard for me to imagine that in the year 2525, that the two of them can continue to go in opposite directions. Now, the question is, where's the day? I mean, if they could, you know, maybe the economy will pick up, which I hope, or maybe the stock market will plateau out for a while, which maybe would be nice, none of a crash or anything. Question is, those are two things. Like, gravity points down, fiery hit a fly ball. At some point, the fly ball is coming this way. I don't know. How long can the market, or can the market continue to get so narrow, and can the companies continue to buy back some of their own stock? Can they keep it there forever? And I'm not saying it's way high here. I'm just saying if growth goes negative for the next 3 years, if we do get some recession, I don't see the market up 10% a year for 5 years, but that would be my experience. Now, other people seem to think that maybe it can. Barry, I don't know. What do you think?
Averages have a way of doing mean reversion. At some point, this gig is going to stop because the more you push it up, the more energy you need to keep it up and push it, you know, push it up another X percent higher. At some point, we're going to fall into trouble. I don't have that screen up. If you look at like transportation and Russell, they were about to create a death cross when all of this happened. So
yeah.
I wonder how fast they're going to come back and visit that. I'll look for some double tops here or triple tops. In the sense that, would it be what you were saying, or implying, that you can't stay up this here forever? Somebody's going to give. We're already pretty high up. We already know also EPS data is going to be guided down. 77% of S&P's CEOs have come and said, most likely they're going to be guiding down here. At least that's the rumor mill says that. So we will know in 2 weeks if that happens. I want to know what they're going to do then. I just don't see this thing going up very high. Now, am I... I'm down here, right? I'm in the Trumpkin land down in southwest Florida. And there's a lot of old money here. Some of these guys are scared. I mean, I've seen a few of them trying to talk about gold. I'm buying some gold and hoarding that. They think there could be anarchy. Yeah, there's a lot of all kinds of... ideas are going, but my point is they're all concerned. You know, this is old money. They're concerned that we can't be just going up. Something is going to give, and if mathematically, Trump has no way of winning this. This is just a head fake, a huge head fake.
Well, Farrell, you mentioned
elections were held today. He has no way of winning. Period. Zero. Zero.
You
has no chance.
Hey,
especially
you mentioned something.
Now that we knew what to look for in the last one.
Well, it depends on who he runs against.
Last election, he's done. He can't.
Well, it depends.
Last, I mean, midterm.
Depends on who he runs
way,
against.
5 million sucker bombs showed up all of a sudden.
But there's
no chance.
There's
now with the stuff with Epstein and all that.
But
I mean, this Epstein stuff takes the Me Too to a different level.
You don't.
So the issue is going to be: is he going to accept the loss, or are we going to have anarchy? That's what these people are worried about down here. You know why? Too much money.
Well,
they don't need to make more money. They just need to retain it.
Right.
Hey, wealth management is not wealth creation.
Hey, I got a question for you. So you opened up a, because now my I can remember stuff from 40 years ago of Miller and I couldn't have for breakfast, because I didn't have breakfast yet, but.
Yeah, of course.
There was a lady, I don't know if she's still with us, she's very nice, hope she is still with us. I'll say her name because it was 40 years ago, Janet Lingle. Back when they had, when we had like no machines to help out when I started. I mean, there was like two or three machines called MindCheck Webers that, you know, would help give you option pricing, and when four people got on the machines, they all slowed down. They all came out of the same mainframe. Anyway. But there was a machine up at First App where I cleared. I think it was called a Future Source or something. But they also had some
Future Source. That was a good data vendor. E-Signal bought them.
But they ended up. But there was also stuff on there that only she knew how to do. I mean, nobody else knew how to work the damn thing. And it had to do with.
But for option prices, didn't you guys were using Option View?
Well, right. No. That was the Schwarzatron came afterwards. Steve Schwartz's machine.
Okay.
And then. Well, the one I used for a long time, not Option View, Option View was after. Anyway, these guys, Track Data I used forever. I still miss my Track Data.
Yeah.
They were the only ones.
They were not good at intraday data. They were pretty good at
the. You know what they were good at? They had a simulation page where you could move the volatility up and move it down and see where the options moved, keeping everything else constant.
That's what we built for Option Monster when John and Pete got started there, and Skip Sheehan. God, I spent hours on that platform for them.
All right, my question is, this is before there were any indexes, before ETFs. Right. There wasn't even an S&P future. But this machine would do studies where, say, IBM, God knows where it was trading. Say it was trading 100. Actually, it was trading a lot higher because it had not split 4-for-1 yet. So it was like 280. So the IBM would rally a day up to say to 282, and the machine would predict. Well, it would say, okay, it took, you know, 500,000 shares of volume to get it up $2. Then the next day, it might go up another $2, but it took, you know, 3 million or 4 million shares of volume to get it up $2.
Right.
And then her point was, then another $2, it was going to take 10 million shares to get it up another $2 because
there's potential energy.
There are people waiting for it.
You're not moving it, but just lifting it. The lifting part is not easy.
Because any kind of theory, any kind of capital theory, unless somebody came out and said that they found gold under the president's office, by and large, more people are going to be willing to sell this stock at 285 than at 280. And every dollar up, you should really run into more people willing to unload it, right?
Yes, exactly.
So
that's what I was expecting part of yesterday. And if you go into like a 10-minute intraday chart yesterday, you'd see that the moment that if you look at all the three indices, you know, S&P, NASDAQ, and Russell. The highs of the day were put in at the open. Go look at it. Look at the 5-minute chart or 10-minute chart.
Yep.
The highs of the day were put in at the open. That is, within the first half an hour, the highs were put in. Since then, either we sold off first, which was a selling rally came in, and that's by the way, that's after the first half an hour, that's when you start talking. We rallied off of his
prepared statement.
I mean, the opening statement at 8:30, and 90 minutes before we started. But once you start talking, we sold off, made an IB low. That's the intraday, the first hour low, and then we vacillated between two levels and not breaking either side. We did not go above the high. We did not go below the low. It was just a sausage operation, but it was interesting. And I said to myself, if this is the moment the 3001 or 3002 print came, or 3003, I guess was the high, 3 came, that's it. They start selling into that. And why not? Listen, remember Netflix? Netflix made a massive EPS report. I mean, just went nuts. We had options. I think Larry was trading it for our guys, Larry Parker. Anyhow, the moment it made that run up, that it was projected from the evening, the after market.
Yep.
We did a double top in the morning, right before the open. The moment it opened, what do you call it, came in, Icon, came in, had a fight with his son. He unloaded 3 million shares. At a $300 stock, you sell 3 million shares, you know what happens.
Oh, yeah.
Massive bloodbath. And the other thing, you know what? This is a gift. Why don't we take, it's not going up, somebody's selling, why don't we take our profit, go on the sidelines, tomorrow's another day.
Well, I mean, I guess my question is, we only got a few seconds, I got to do a live read here, but is all that stuff that was years and years ago, I don't know today that IBM's trading 140, 115, I don't know that there's a million shares available at 43 in a specialist book and 2 million at 40. I don't know if any of that stuff's around, Fari.
Yeah. By the way, there's a software called LIM, Logical Information Machines, and I know the guy who started it. He actually sold it to Morningstar or somebody for $50 million.
Really?
Tony Colton. He's a nice guy. Actually, he uses
I'll bet he's. I bet he bought a yacht that made
it. I look at his picks. Very quickly, he runs, actually, it's better run, you won't believe this, the software. It's better run by English majors, not traders.
Really?
Because it's the way you put the question to it. So now it's called, you come in, the LIM works like this. IBM is at 140. Apple has did that. We've been up 2 days. The Fed has done this. Now, 3 days forward, what's the chances of IBM and Apple to be higher? It goes and computes, come back, tells you what your odds are.
Really? All right, Fry, we'll talk to you next week, buddy. Trade them well today.
Be good.
S&P futures up 5, actually 450, 4.25. Some numbers just came out. We have all this stuff when we come back from the break.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, everybody. It's Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Jack Silverman on the board. Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probabilities, available on newsstands for $7.99 an issue. Stocks and Jacks listeners receive a free digital subscription. It's free. You know Jack's motto, it's free, it's for me, right, Jack? At luckboxmagazine.com/Jacks, it's pretty impressive. And I don't usually say that about stuff, but it's pretty darn nice. Been looking at it. I might have a couple of people write the securities articles start coming on the show because I think they're pretty darn good. We've had the market drop here somewhat, well, I won't say dramatically. We're down to like $6 here. Spoos are only up 375. NASDAQ only up 8 because the CPI number came out with 0.1, the big number, but 0.3, and the ex-food and energy, which I'm going to say, if I were to guess, probably puts the Fed more towards a quarter point than this really hoped for half point. So I think the quarter point is not going to burst any, not going to make anybody too happy, but I think that's what they're going to get, but we'll see. Again, over in Europe, we've got DAX down 30, down 0.2%. FTSE down 5, it's 0.1, call it. CAC round up 3, call that flat. Asia up across the board, but not a real lot. Nikkei up 110, 0.5%. Shanghai up 2, call that flat. Hang Seng up 227.8. They're probably the bigger rally. Oil up 11 cents now. Was up a little bit more earlier. 60.54. Brent up 6 cents, 67.07. Natural gas 246, going nowhere. RBOB back over $2, $2 and 2.009. So if you like that. Gold, however, on the move, up 880, 1421. Silver up 5 cents, 1527. Jack, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Easy, don't you got no sports?
Yeah, no sports today, but we do have some traffic. To start off, we only have one accident to report. North Ave at Clybourne Ave, right off the Kennedy. But we have a lot of traffic going on. The Eisenhower, Stevenson, Kennedy, and Edens are all backed up with traffic. Southbound expressways don't seem as bad, but you do have to watch out. There's a lot of traffic going on. In Chicago, very nice day, 75 and sunny with a high of 76, and a scorcher in Phoenix, 86, partly cloudy with a high of 112. So you got to watch out there. And you mentioned unusual day for sports, not really anything to go about. There's no professional games last night. NFL, NBA, and NHL are all out of season. The MLB concluded its All-Star break yesterday, returns tonight with Astros vs. Rangers. The Cubs, White Sox, and Diamondbacks will all resume play tomorrow. Chief.
So if you're going to go in to find a sports bar you can never get into, tonight would be the night.
Absolutely.
Of course, in a sports bar you can't watch any sports. Kind of what's the point?
There really is none.
I guess you can watch the one baseball game.
I guess so.
It's sort of like the night after way back in the day before you were even around, Jack. The rock and roll McDonald's was huge, right? I mean, everybody went from state to state and, country to country. And nobody could ever get into one here. So one night, Dr. J and I get done, this before he was married, and before he had the family. So we go, it's the day after Super Bowl, and I go, it's snowing. I said, Jan, I bet we could go to the rock and roll McDonald's tonight and get in. I think we're the only two people in the place. It was a day after Super Bowl in a snowstorm. It doesn't get any better than that. So the guy goes, Jan says, geez, is this place all that crowded all the time? I go, yeah, I think we're here on a special night. But it was pretty neat. I mean, they had all the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame stuff, and it was kind of nice. But anywho, do we have Russell?
You've got me. I'm so sorry. First off, that Rock and Roll McDonald's, man.
Not the Rock and Roll McDonald's. The other place. What's the place that sold T-shirts?
Rock and Roll Cafe.
Rock and Roll Cafe. Sorry.
Hard Rock. Hard Rock. Okay. I was going to say the Rock and Roll McDonald's. They completely rebuilt it.
Yeah.
But what one of my little hobbies is you can actually follow on Twitter what's going on the Chicago police scanner.
Oh yeah.
And every Friday night, every Saturday night after midnight, there's at least one fight at that McDonald's now.
Well, I mean, it was always the spot to get your...
Yeah, and it's nice and touristy, but man, after midnight, I fear for a tourist that walks in there.
Well, you have nothing but people piling out of bars drunk, and it's the last place, the only place, really, to get some munchies before you hit the road.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. And today and 2 days ago are the only days every year that we have no professional sports in the United States.
Yeah.
So if you're going to launch a league, schedule games on those 2 days.
Well, yeah.
You know, if I were the, because Major League Soccer is going on right now, if I were those guys, I would load up my schedule the day before the All-Star game and the day after the All-Star game, because you got nothing to compete with on TV.
We got a quick story about munchies on the way home. Lived on the south side, but once in a while, you know, we'd had, you know, Clark and Division or something to go to the bars like most normal people, or people with a pulse, shall we say. So this goofy buddy of mine from the south side, Jan Flanagan, brilliant guy, but nutty as a loon. I always drove, right? So he always had some book of a place to go to eat on the north side that was, you know, when we're done with the bars. So we go to some place at midnight or something. And, we went to, Pizza and Oven Grinder before anybody knew where the place was where they sold a pizza by the pound, right? So we tried that. So one night on the way home, he goes, hey, you know, they got this shrimp shop up here. We'll grab some shrimp for the ride home. And I go, really? You ever heard of the Goose Island Shrimp Shop? It's still there.
I'd never heard of that.
It's there. And let's just say back in the day, it was very close to the projects and so forth. So mm-hmm. I pull up, and I'm going to say there's... Well, the 60s word or 70s word for it, there had to be nine of the biggest pimpmobiles I ever saw. They're all deucing the quarters or Cadillacs, the big wheels and the whole bit. And I go, we're not really going in here. He goes, oh, yeah, it's supposed to be a great place. We go in. They looked at us like, what are you two idiots doing here? They were both big guys, but still, we weren't that big. And
They're thinking, what are you two thinking?
Yeah, what are you two thinking?
Yeah.
And I parked remember how big those, as they used to say in the hood, the deuce and some change. Remember those things?
Yes.
Well, all right, what's a deuce and some change?
Russell's
That's
funny.
It's a the Electra 225. They used to call them deuce and some change was the vernacular. And those things were, I mean, if they were even bigger than the Cadillacs or they were the same size, those things were monster. They're all lined up. Anyway, we go in there and we got some shrimp and we made it out of there and the shrimp was pretty good, actually. So what do you make of... Your brother, your lead economist man in the world, talking in front of Congress, and it looks like he's going to, although I think the CPI number this morning, and the market's telling you we're down to a quarter point cut. And then what? The world's going to be okay? Go ahead.
Well, the only thing that could disrupt the world right now is if we don't get the quarter point at the end of the month. I'm actually amazed that the odds went to only, the odds have only gone up to about 16% that we were going to get 50 basis points. So, and personally, I think that, some people that benefit from trading volume, jawboning things around to get some people to trade in a slow time of the year. I don't think we've ever in reality, moved off of that quarter point cut, really since maybe Memorial Day. We really have been set the same place. Sometimes you'll see the stock market jerk around. I think we talked about this when I was here a week or... No, I talked about this somewhere else. Sorry. We got the employment number, and the only market that really acted like things may have changed was the stock market. The bond market didn't. Currencies didn't. Everything else kind of stayed where they were, but the stock market had this weird reaction. And I wonder if maybe, you know, just some of the big firms that advise people out there were saying, oh, there might be some uncertainty now around what we're going to get at the end of the month, really just to generate some trading. After then, we really basically just got right back on track to where we were. You know, marched our way to an all-time high earlier this week. So,
well, you look at what's happening.
The, the only thing that can happen that might upset the card is if we don't get 25 basis points, because that's what everybody really does expect.
Well, it's all, I mean, you well, there's nothing you can do but look at it, but it's always aggravating to me, Russell, that I'm watching CNBC and they're doing the Rick Santelli, he's ready to go, and he's doing all this stuff with the CPI number. All of a sudden, I see the S&P futures drop 7 points. Clearly, somebody's got this number. You know, and then,
right before, I know, yeah, I know.
I mean, it's right there in front of you.
I used to trade all of these numbers, and I'd see exactly, things would widen out, there'd be a little bit of trading in one direction or another, and then, boom.
Yeah.
And sometimes they get it right, and sometimes they don't get it right. But it seems like they get it right more often than not, huh?
Some numbers, I actually,
Well, and you know that between you and you hearing Santelli, there's about a 4 second delay.
Yeah.
There's probably some guy sitting out there on the lawn or wherever they are at the Labor Department that has looked over the shoulder of one of the reporters that got the embargoed report that hits a button right before the before they start talking.
Well, they're actually
right when they start talking. Let's put it that way.
I've had 2-3 people on the show kind of talking about this. Well, no, one was not on the show. Mm-hmm. He was some. Well, of course, you're never going to get it. In this country where you think people actually give a bleep about the truth, you don't see a whole hell of a lot of stuff written up like this. Anyway, the one I read about the Fed, this is the one that got Pedro da Costa in trouble when he asked Janet Yellen about the investigation. Some guy from Hong Kong, of course he had to be out of the country, did some extensive research and front-running of Fed announcements.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even some of the Fed, you know, local, what do they call them, regional bank presidents going and giving a speech and how they're kind of front. And he came out with a vicious indictment that they clearly need to clean it up. And yet the same guy applied all the same principles to the labor numbers, and he said there's no discernible front running at all.
Well, you know, they come out of different places.
Yeah.
And I know that the security, I mean, I know for a fact that the security around the labor number is off the charts because they understand how important that is. And I think it's much like an investment banking deal where, you know, Goldman's got to track the 8 or 9 people that have access to all the information. The Labor Department is on that one. And as long as, you know, the president doesn't, you know, who does get to see the number in advance, doesn't leak something, it's usually kept secure till right before the time.
Well,
the other numbers are put out by different entities. And I think there's more potential people involved that might leak something out.
Well, tell you what, Russell, you give
also,
me...
Also, I think for some of those numbers, it's actually possible if you've got an army of people that do a little bit of legwork that you might be able to do your own very quick survey and try to figure out what you think the number's going to be.
Well,
I think it's harder with the labor number.
Which would you, if you gave me, or I gave you, we're sitting here to two-headed monster trading, if you gave me the labor numbers a minute in advance, I'd almost say keep them. You give me a Fed announcement or a Fed speech a minute in advance, I'm going to be a wealthy man.
Yeah. Well, it, you know, you say that for the labor number, and I think 11 out of 12 times every year, you're probably right. But there, if you were given it and then want, you know, you actually had access to them consistently, you wouldn't trade everyone. But when you saw that outlier number.
Oh, probably, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, or if you were able to see that the headline number is going to look bad, but underlying everything else looks good, like you know, where
that could be,
make a knee jerk reaction off of the off the high, you know, the headline number, but then it's like, oh, well, they revised last month, so it all kind of evens out, and everything rebounds very quickly.
I don't think
you could make money right with now, see, now you, every month.
See where you just walked.
You could.
See where you just walked. You walked as a professor talking to regular people on the show. And for those that don't know where Russell just went, he's very aware of what the quants are and so forth. And what he's saying is, what I said categorically, give me the labor number a minute before it comes out, and I would not be able to make a trade very often before the number having that minute that I think was going to be a winner, because when I'll give me a Fed announcement a minute early, and I'm going to be a winner a lot of times. Now, when Russell walked down this road, showing how he is a professor, he's saying that if the full report that you get to read, if the first number in the report doesn't match the second number, when the number comes out that's believed to be good and all the idiot quants jump on and run the market up, he's going to fade that move because he's got the secondary number. That's a whole different program. Russell,
yeah,
a whole different level of sophistication.
And still, I only think that maybe once a year you'd be able to take advantage of that.
But
I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying,
you're taking advantage to the quick twitch guys. I'm saying, you're not really taking advantage of the number itself. It's a little different. Mm-hmm. The way, to the extent that you can take advantage of the quick twitch guys, I'm all for it. if that money went from them to you, I'd be the happiest man on earth. You know, I got one question. I just mentioned it to Fari.
Sure.
He didn't. Let's say, for instance, you're in the Fed.
I got to know what Fari said.
Well, I will. I'll tell you. He didn't have really.
I'm afraid of Fari.
He didn't have much of an answer. So let's put it that way. The question was: you look at where the Fed is right now and where the economy is. Well, you're at, let's say, 2.5. Everybody's bitching and moaning at you for to go to 2.25 or 2. You're pushing money supply out at over 4.5%, which is way in excess that you need for an economy limping along at 3, and that's if you believe it's 3. I don't. Say 2.5. You haven't had a person anywhere, in any bank, any place for years or almost a decade now, saying there isn't enough money available to give a loan. So there's absolutely no reason whatsoever from classical monetary theory to lower this rate down. You know, whether you do it a quarter or not, I don't care. I mean, 2.5 is the same as 2.25 versus 2.75. No big deal. It's not like it's 6 to, you know, to 5.5 or something. But the question is, when you've got other, I'll use the term idiots in the world that have negative interest rates, that is totally, totally skewing, certainly in the eyes of the president, the dollar relationship to the point where the dollar is too high because these other people have interest rates that are negative. Should that, or how much would that influence your decision? Basically, somebody else's horrible decisions, in my opinion.
God,
that's a tough question.
I think I'm going to be as helpful as Fari was.
I'm going to say, Russell, that's what these guys spent 80% of their time talking about the last 2 days. This has become a dollar issue. It's not a quantity of available liquidity. It's not a not being able to make a loan. It's a dollar issue right now.
Yeah, that seems to be where their focus has turned somewhat. But as far as circling back to what their actual job is supposed to be, it's kind of a stretch for them to be focusing like that, isn't it?
Not when everybody, When you walk in front of the, and I'll use her name because I remember her doing it a few times, and she's recognizable to be, when you walk in there and you're the Fed chairman and a Maxine Waters, say, were to say something like, there's unemployment in my district or we had 4 shootings last weekend, what can you do about it? Well, what's to say the next guy for saying, you know, I can't compete with, you know, German widgets because the dollar is now 30% higher than it was, you know, 2 years ago, and I can't sell my crap over there. What are you doing about it? I mean, it's sort of,
if I were the Fed chair, and I had to deal with that, man, it was so comical for those of us that have above average IQ to watch Alan Greenspan deal with Congress. You know, Powell's not along the same lines as far as his ability to just deviate into obscure stuff and put everybody to sleep and run out the clock.
Yeah.
You know, I would just look right at Maxine Waters and I would say, you know, I have provided you with, you know, basically here are what our duties are as far as the Fed goes. Our duty is to, maintain as high unemployment, you know, as low unemployment as possible, and manage inflation at the same time.
All right, so how How is
and ma'am, how does your question relate to that? I will answer questions that relate to what the Fed's really supposed to do. Otherwise, I will refer you to the different departments that you should be asking these questions of.
All right, so okay. But that,
maybe I should be Fed chair because I just love to do that.
Well, but that would okay. That would take care of Maxine, although she wouldn't be too happy. But now the other guy.
Is she ever?
But the other guy. Now he's going to say
the other guy. Well, that one. You know, if so, my district is upset because we're not able to compete with widgets anymore. Well, sir, it's a really large economy and. On average, we're doing well, and you guys are just going to have to take one for the team.
We've been taking one for the team savers for 10 years. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, but I'm saying,
cracking myself.
No, I don't. But if you're talking about full employment, if somebody says to you, when the dollar got up to 1.1 pounds, everybody buys this stuff now from this British place and not us. I've laid off 30 people, and by the way, the place is closing in 2 months if this thing doesn't change. Well, how does that not affect your full employment part of your plan?
Let's start. Well, with what we're doing right now, you know, the numbers indicate that we're very close to full employment. So those folks should be able to find a job somewhere else.
Not the same. Yeah. Okay.
And you know, I wouldn't say something like that. That's an awful thing to say.
That would go over like a fart in church, basically.
Oh, it would. You know, but. Hey, the Fed chair is supposed to be completely apolitical. That, you know, shouldn't he just be honest about things like that?
Well, when your job are inflation and full employment, how could it ever be apolitical?
I know. Well, you're supposed to be. That's why he gets, what is he, a 14-year term or something like
Russell,
that?
Russell, your job is to remain dry. By the way, the new job I gave you is a swimming coach. Right? I mean, isn't that what we're asking the guy to do?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is it all does sort of relate to other things, and that's why I find it very hard. I mean, I know that I'm not, you know, whatever. I'm not saying a Democrat would be better or an independent. Actually, I think an independent would be better if we got the right person. But the point being is, we focus on these single issues, and we're stunned when other basically crap happens. I mean, I go back to my dentist, and he couldn't believe that anybody would vote for. Who did Bush beat the first time? Was it Gore? And he beat Kerry the second time?
Yeah.
He beat Gore, and he couldn't believe that anybody would vote for Gore in the south side of Chicago, where virtually everybody's Catholic, because of the abortion issue.
Yeah.
And 2 years later, where the hell it was, I'm going in, I'm getting my teeth cleaned, and he says, I can't believe I'm so pissed off about this invasion of Iraq, the amount of money and the amount of people and the amount of legs and... I mean, what are we doing? That's the dumbest decision we've ever made. I looked at him. I said, Doc, you know, when you're a single issue voter, you got to take the good with the bad. And he looked at me. You know, if you voted for somebody because you hated Hillary, I couldn't vote for Hillary no matter what. So I'm sort of in that camp.
Yeah.
I mean, if you voted for the man because you hated Hillary, you got to take what you get. Unfortunately, you know, because
yeah.
I mean, when was the last time, Russell? Honestly, you voted for someone.
I voted for Mitt Romney.
Okay.
I felt like we needed. I don't have enough time.
Oh, I'm saying no.
But it wasn't a vote against Obama. It really was. I felt like he was a level-headed business leader kind of guy. That's the kind of guy that I would love to be president.
By the way, I voted for him as well. I'm thinking the only guy...
And that was a vote for.
I voted... Well, no, it was against. I didn't like Obama's first term. I mean, the only guy I honestly think I ever really voted for, you're going to laugh at this, I really like Jerry Ford.
I could see that. I could totally see that. And I'm not going to laugh at that. He did a lot of things that... He did things that were above himself, and he probably did some things that he felt were best for the country that risked his ability to get reelected. And you had to respect that an awful lot.
Yeah, bingo. I mean, that's exactly what I felt about the guy, too.
Yeah, and I was, I mean, I'm pretty sharp. I was 9 when he was president.
Yeah. Hey, we get our quarter point cut. When is the next meeting, by the way? I don't know. It's July.
It's the last day of the month. It's
all right,
the 31st.
All right, so we got a quarter point cut. If you see the market run up that day, do you sell it? If it's only a quarter and it goes down, do you buy it? I mean, what do you do?
I would probably fade either extreme move because I feel like the whole thing should be completely priced in right now. So any extreme move the day of it is the market assuming we're going to get something different than consensus. I don't think we get the big move in front, though.
Maybe that's just because you're a fader.
But if we did, I would totally be in there buying.
Are you a fader by nature? Just a fader?
Am I? Yeah, I am.
Russell, we got a dash, buddy. SP futures up 5.25, and NASDAQ futures up 10 or 16. We were higher till the CPI numbers came out, and we kind of halved it, but we're still up. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.